Do Arsenal have a red card problem? We talk about that right up top. We talk a lot more about the Premier League. Also, Christian Pulisicini. What a wonderful guy. We also talk about MLS, but in between that.
Yes, we're going to be joined by Axel Hammond, the CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt, to talk business, to talk finances.
We're having a business meeting on this show.
We're going to let you in on a little secret behind how it all works. So all this and more today on The Cooligans.
So remember, I was in Boston a few weeks ago.
Yes, I do recall.
Actually, two weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I stayed at a very nice place. I ended up getting it on points. It was one night only. I wanted to treat Donna, so I got it on points. Got a very nice place. It's called 15 Beacon, if anybody wants to go and stay
look at
there.
That. Look at that free advertisement. It was beautiful. 15 Beacon, you're welcome.
So they upgraded me when I got there. Sometimes when you book a place on points, they'll upgrade you when you get there. There was an upgrade. You got upgraded.
Got it.
It was a nice room. It had a fireplace in it that you could turn on with a switch. We used it. It was beautiful. I've never used the fireplace before. It was quite nice. I enjoy it.
City kid right here.
I'm like, yo, that's crazy, bro. What are they burning? You know? We only burn rats. And couches. But hey, the most impressive thing about the place was the toilet paper. Now, I know I talk about bathroom stuff a lot on the show.
Comes up quite a bit.
This was the most glorious.
What made the toilet paper so amazing? That's worth beginning an episode of The Cooligans.
You really want me to answer that in detail? It was like using the pod that aloe vera comes from on your behind.
Got it. So the softness,
it was soft, it was smooth, it was silky. You know what I mean?
Got it.
It was a joy to use. I wanted to rub it on my face, not after I used it.
Yeah, you got to get the order right.
Yeah. You ever blow your nose with toilet paper and you're like, that's a mistake. I just scraped all the skin off my nose. This, amazing. It felt like you wanted it. I felt like I was wiping my behind with a child's quilt, you know?
Wow.
It was great. So I did what only I think I would do. Can you guess what I did?
I don't even want to even think of
that. I called the hotel and I said, hello.
For the brand, yeah.
I say, hey, name's Alexis, stayed in room blank.
I work for the Central Broadcasting Service.
Yeah, I work for the Comfortable Behind Society. And you guys have just ranked number one. I said, hey, when I was there, I used the toilet paper. And I called at like 10 p.m. on a Sunday. This was last night. I think the guy thought I was pranking him. And I'm like, I want you to know there is zero prank here, sir. I need to know a brand. Came back. Do you want to guess? Should we say? Or is it cool that they're not sponsors?
That's might as well.
Do you want to guess?
I have no idea.
Just guess. If you had
not
a guess.
Charmin.
We can all find it in the store. I was shocked. I'm a Scott guy. You know what I mean? I like to use Scott.
Scott is you had a Latino mom.
100%.
If you had Scott.
Latinos will use low grade sandpaper, basically, as toilet paper.
I remember one time when I was a kid, before you give the answer, when I was a kid.
I need y'all to guess.
My aunt had some of the softest toilet paper in the world.
White aunt?
It was what?
White? Woman, your aunt?
My aunt was...
The aunt by marriage? I don't know.
No. I'm Dominican. She was Dominican, not white. Anyway, she had very soft toilet paper. So one time, I must have been like 8 years old. My mom was like, go get toilet paper at the store. I go, I see the toilet paper that my aunt has. I'm like, let me just buy this one. My mom never buys this. She just gets the Scott's. And I brought it home.
It was like you drove in. It was like you pulled in a Bugatti, right?
You know what she told me?
What?
I will never forget it. My mom said, go return it and get the toilet paper that we get. And I had to go.
Esco.
And I didn't know why.
Yeah.
And so when I finally got an adult money in my own place.
We're buying the good stuff, mom.
This is how we rebel.
You ain't going to hold us back. This is why I think my butthole is sending me a message in Braille. Because I've been using Scott my whole life. Did we guess what brand?
No, I don't know.
It's Cottonelle.
Cottonelle?
Cottonelle.
All right. You don't see it coming.
That's it. Cottonelle.
All right.
I'm personally a quilted northern guy. So that's surprising
okay,
for me.
Okay, there we go. Quilted northern. I've only seen commercials. I've never used it.
Gotcha.
I'm going to start venturing outside of the Scott territory. I'm going to start buying other toilet paper, bro. It's unfair.
Incredible. All right. Well, we learned a lot today about Alexis's butt. So welcome to the show, everybody.
We're going to start being able to piece all the stuff together and really get a good idea of what I look like back there.
Okay. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerreros.
We're here, as always, on sports. Crushing it per usual. The other voice you heard, the quilted northern man,
yeah,
is our producer Carter. So I'm glad, you know, we're Carter's new here, so I'm glad we're just learning. You're getting acclimated to how we all, you know, bond.
Yeah, we like to build a profile of ourselves from the back to the front.
So a lot to go over today. MLS decision day happened over the weekend. Club football returned out in Europe, and we got to look forward to the MLS playoffs. We also have an incredible episode with an incredible guest, the CEO.
It's crazy.
CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt, Axel Heltman, will be joining us in a little bit.
CEO.
And how excited is he to be on the show with all the toilet paper talk? All right.
He's going to be like, this is the show I need to be on.
I came to the right program.
We don't have this in Germany.
You know what they think? In Germany, they think they're too good for toilet paper talk. But no, baby. Not here. Not here. TPT is what we call it.
Toilet paper talk.
Okay. TST is a different one.
You know what? I'm going to review. I'm gonna buy the new toilet paper.
Toilet paper reviews from the toilet.
You know. I'll let you know. Maybe it's not the same. Maybe they lied to me to get me off the scent.
From
you know what I mean?
From the toilet with the vlogging camera. Yeah, it's gonna be great. So
let me go like this is great.
Let's start today with the Premier League because a lot of there's never a shortage of drama, and week after week it seems to be that the referees want to make it about them. They're like, hey, you're talking about these players too much.
We're trying to get our money up. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If you're a referee, like, I need more cameras.
We're trying to up our followers. You know what I mean?
Especially some of these referees really been hitting the gym, bro.
Some of these referees, I'll be honest, and it was a strange thing. I think I had followed, there was like a referee that was in a video. You seen that dude that is like, that is mic'd up, like the referee that's mic'd up? He pops up on Instagram all the time, and he's a tall black dude, referee.
Yeah,
and
he's getting
players, and he's a great ref.
Yeah.
So I followed that account. And then, you know, Instagram shows you like, oh, follow these accounts.
This guy must love referees.
So it showed me all like a bunch of referees, like MLS referees.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, why you got on social media? You crazy?
Yeah.
You got to be a little crazy to be a referee and have a social media account.
You're giving people places to find you.
You know they're going to be mad.
Right.
I'm just saying, I'm not saying they should direct any abuse at anybody.
No. But it's, also, maybe don't put yourself out there, yo.
You know how many stupid people are on the internet?
Bro, Finsta, my guy.
You got to wear a mask.
You
got to
have a TikTok. You can't be out here.
You can't be out here like that.
With a regular open account.
But let's also, Bournemouth and Arsenal. Obviously the red card to Saliba. Right,
no drama in this game.
I mean it's a frustrating.
Here's my hot take: if David Raya doesn't run backwards, it's not a red card. Isn't that crazy?
If he doesn't run back,
if David Raya continues to make a run towards the ball, clearly he's going to be out of position.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because it wouldn't be dog so. I guess
it wouldn't be dog so.
Mm.
So that's my hot take.
So we got to blame
anything to not blame Saliba.
Oh, or not blame Trossard for the ridiculous
Trossard
pass.
For the terrible pass. That's William Saliba's first red card of his career.
Which is, as a center back, that is pretty crazy. Or just as a defender. Pretty
as
crazy.
A young center back.
Yeah, you would think, you make
going
a,
in a
couple,
rash.
Couple mistakes in your early in your career.
Not if you're Saliba, baby.
No, Saliba is a very smart, intelligent defender. And clearly, you know, and arguably one of the better defenders in the Premier League. And for, look, this is, why is this becoming an issue for Arsenal? Why are these repeated mistakes and seemingly... self-inflicted, especially the one for Trossard, the one for Declan Rice. This one makes more sense. If this was the first red card of Arsenal season, you're like, all right, it's gonna happen.
No, it's the third.
The third in eight games,
man.
I mean, get all three in one game.
Yo, so I you gotta start swinging on people if you Arsenal players, bro.
So
you
gotta
earn these red cards, bro.
So you're not missing players for so many games.
We gotta bring in goons. Remember back in the day, like in basketball, there'd be guys who you're like, yo, you're here for two things.
Yeah.
To pee clean and to fight people. And that's why we're bringing you into the game. We need that. We got five subs,
the
bro.
The game's gone, bro. You can't have goons anymore. But you can't have goons anymore, really, because especially... this is a,
you what know, VAR calls yellows reds now.
but in the Premier League, the penalty for getting a red card to miss three games, we have to stop with this nonsense. When was this implemented, Carter? Can you look up when the 3-game suspension was implemented?
For straight reds?
Because it was fairly new. I think it's within the last like 5 or 6 years that they implemented this.
I hate that. I hate yellow card accumulation. Makes no sense.
Yellow card accumulation.
When the whistle blows, it's a clean slate.
So 3 games for getting a red card. For stupid, like if it's violent conduct, 100% I get it.
For this? The tug of a shoulder.
Tug of a shoulder or even delay of game, kicking the ball away. I mean, obviously, when you get the two yellows and you get a red, it's only one game. But yeah. a straight red is 3. This is...
I will say, back in the day, like it was hard to get a second yellow. You had to earn that joint. Like a little bit foul here or whatever, the ref be like, I don't want to influence the game.
Yeah.
Now they're just like, oh, Arsenal's playing? How can I influence this game?
But 3 games for a red is, to me...
Silly.
Unnecessary. It's maybe
game's gone. I sound like one of those British podcasts. Nah, the game's gone, fam.
Two games. I guess I kind of get it. Like you want to remove the violent play and aggressive.
Is
tackles.
It not enough to spend an entire game playing with 10 men?
Yeah, that and then also to have that individual player miss the next match. Everywhere else in the world, to my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Everywhere else in the world, every other league. You get a red card, you miss the next game.
Yeah.
And that is it. Go for it, Carter.
I have some great news for Alexis.
Mm.
Because this wasn't a red card for violent conduct, it was for a denial of a clear goal score, whatever that...
Dog so.
It's only a one-match ban.
Get... Hey. Look at this!
He's only going to miss the Liverpool game.
Yeah, just one of the most important matches of the season.
Okay, so now... I love this rule. Yeah. I think it's great. You know what? I spoke a little too soon.
But I'm glad we could solve that on the show.
We figured it out. Okay. Because my thought was a straight red was a 3-game. But no, straight red for violent conduct is 3.
That makes a lot more sense.
But even still.
To miss a game at all.
Maybe we should tone it down with 3.
Can we add a card between yellow and red? Where it says, sorry, you missed the rest of this match, but not the next
like,
one.
Like, who was it? Kudus got the red, right?
Yeah, so Kudus is going to miss at least 3 games. He could miss more.
Yes, because I thought that was simply another mush. You know, we've had the mush slap debate on this show often.
We're pro-mush on this
show.
We're
pro-mush. Shouldn't be one game. I get you can't. You get a mush.
Oh no, there should be mush repercussions.
You can't not get penalized for a mush. Yeah. Nobody's arguing that.
You're doing it knowing that there's repercussions coming.
A mush and just a moving of your face from my face.
Yeah,
which I get.
Sounds fair to me.
Because it got a little heated, right. And it was a bang bang mush.
Yeah,
it was quick. Yeah. It wasn't really like a slap.
He didn't wind back.
Mm-mm.
But what happens if you mush twice in like 10 seconds? Which he did. He mushed Van de Ven and then he mushed Sar.
But why am I getting up in Kudus' face?
Yeah, you saw what he just did to the last guy. Why are you getting back in my face?
You've seen I'm capable of this.
The man has mush in his locker, bro.
Why would you tempt me again?
Yeah, that's your fault.
So
who was the second? Van de Ven?
No, first was
Van de Ven. Van de Ven, and then Sar pushed him defend, and then he hits him in the face.
Yeah. So Sar, bro. Sar was an instigator. That should be a red card. Red card for being
you know what?
A Thea.
I'm going to say, sorry, you get in this red too. Okay? They're getting a little too crazy with these red cards. But look, so back to Arsenal and Saliba. Frustrating, even as a non-Arsenal fan who wants to see somebody besides City attempt to win this title. Arsenal are letting me down by getting into these compromising situations all the time, playing down a man. And shout out to Bournemouth. Look, they got the 2 goals and they played well.
Yeah,
By the time
Wanyeri came in, who probably should have started, by the time Wanyeri came in, it was already too late. If you're Bournemouth, this is a massive win. If you're Arsenal, You dropped points when you didn't need to in a match that you should have at least gotten a result. And at the end of the day, that is what wins championships, is not doing what Arsenal did here. And I'll go back, do the Invincibles. That era, Arsenal was still played well with 10 men. That doesn't mean they win every match, but they still played well with 10 men. Mm-hmm. This was a complete capitulation as soon as the first goal went. As soon as they went down to 10.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much to always expect. Like, some teams can handle being down a man better than others. And I wouldn't go as far to say complete capitulation, but like for...
You watched the game, right? This was a complete capitulation.
For them to not be able to create even, you know, many chances or really almost any chances down a man. It's like, you know, you train a little bit in those scenarios down a man to try to find ways to create some sort of opportunity.
Also, if you're a championship team, if this was Bournemouth versus City with 10 men, a City would find ways to get shots on target. Exactly. Even to look pedestrian on corners, which is their whole thing. You think you go down to 10 and all of a sudden you got these great corners. You know, Nicolas Jovert has all these great setups. You're going to be able to get opportunities, and they look bad. And in fact, they score on Arsenal with a corner.
And that's the thing. So when it comes to, you know, the comparison between Arsenal and City are always going to be there, given, you know, Arteta came from there.
Whoever's competing for the title is going to get compared to City.
Without a doubt. But there's something just to Arsenal and their look. Yes, they have some injuries and stuff like that, but the mentality to really attempt to win this title, it doesn't seem to be there.
No, but also it's only 8 matches in. It's too early to say that the title race is over, but
the mentality, not even the title race is over, but the mentality.
No, I'm agreeing with you. Just a lot of people are saying that,
and it's not even on Saliba. I don't think Saliba did really anything wrong here. I think instinctively he's like, let me delay this, you know, the attacker from getting forward.
Pulling on the shoulder is so light compared. It's not like he clattered.
It's not a big deal, but it's enough to again.
Warren did a yellow.
Yeah, I think it did warrant the red. I think
you're anti-Arsenal like the rest of them. What are you, a referee? Okay. This is how we find out?
Dude, I could see it being a red there, but it's whatever. I'd rather argue, why is Trossard making that pass? It's the decision-making in those moments, and this is why it's been killing Arsenal.
Did Everton lose? Can we talk about that?
They won 2-0 against Ipswich. Which, bro,
I know they did win.
I'm still monitoring every single time Everton succeed. I'm like, all right, how close are they to Nottingham Forest? Because we have that. We have the little wager with Ariel Helwani. I said Everton are going to finish above Nottingham Forest. Yeah. And we're getting closer. Mm. All right. Nottingham Forest plays later today. And I'm hoping for a loss. All right. Next up, we have to refering controversy. Man City, that last second win of John Stones, former Everton.
Gary O'Neill is their coach?
Gary
O'Neill is the Wolves coach. I'm with him on this. And it's not because City and Arsenal in the competition. So Asmir Begovic gave an interview where he said, and this is the Everton backup, he said, okay, maybe a player like Bernardo Silva isn't directly interfering with the shot or the line of view. But as a goalkeeper, you have to be cognizant of a player that's offside by a lot and is less than a yard away from you.
Mm-hmm.
You're worrying about that at the same time looking at the shot. That, to me, is a goalkeeper telling you a player being in an offside position that close to me, even if they're ducking out of the way, is still kind of interfering with me. And that, at the end of the day, like the verbiage we're using in this is so unclear. And it leaves so much to the ref to figure out that these things aren't going to be called consistently. So, fine. Okay, a player goes back. You got Bernardo Silva trying to push the keeper. The keeper pushes him away and then has to turn. And then he never gets back in his way. In a way, because he's right there, I'm with Asmir Begovic on this. That's kind of interfering.
Yeah, I think...
We're making the ref make this judgment call on behalf of the goalkeeper?
Yeah, the last few years when they've been more focused on implementing the offside rule, when a player is interfering, like not involved in the play, but maybe like blocking the line of sight for the goalkeeper.
Or like stopping the goalkeeper from moving, like if he was up against the goalkeeper.
Yeah, which that one kind of makes more sense.
Those are easy to call.
It feels like we are sort of rewarding Bernardo Silva and rewarding Man City for like mucking up the play a little bit, but getting out just when, as soon as the contact is hit, you know, the ball makes contact to a player and is going towards the goal.
Right.
I was there a couple seconds ago. Not now. Right. I'm not doing anything.
What are you talking about? I'm a concerned citizen.
I am an innocent bystander just watching this game.
That's like, it's not cheating if, you know, your wife's sister leaves before your wife gets there. It's ridiculous. Yes,
that's exactly what it's like.
I think it's, what are you talking about? You know what I mean?
She is not here. What are you talking about? I am not with her. We are not together.
What are you talking about? I don't know where she is. Why? What, you mean you have your Find My iPhone? You see her running in our backyard? That's crazy. Why would she be running back there? Maybe she's exercising.
But watching the play and watching the goal, right? The initial play on the field was disallowed. But there's watching it in like slow-mo.
No, the original call was allowed.
No. The original call was disallowed.
It was disallowed by the...
No. The goal counted and then... They went to...
Oh, okay, wait. Yeah,
the goal counted at first, and then they said potential offside. They're checking it, and then it stayed.
Yeah. That is what happened, yeah. So the issue there... So what, when you're watching it, and I was like watching the VAR, watching it in slow-mo, it felt like this should be a goal. That's how I'm watching it.
You know when I saw that? When they showed the angle of from behind the players directly in line with the goalkeeper... You know, the angle from the other goal.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, I'm like, Bernardo Silva is not even in the shot.
Exactly.
But then when you show the side angle, Bernardo Silva is right there. Like, you have to keep track of a player that's right there. Like, I get it. He didn't interfere with the actual shot. But did he interfere with the keeper's ability to focus on the shot?
To prepare for the shot coming to him.
I kind of think he did.
I sort of see that. But and that's the thing. It's like, in real time, it's like... I sort of lean towards that, right? But then watching it in slow mo, it feels like who's the goalkeeper? I forgot his name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But I know he's Portuguese. But he basically Sa, right? Something Sa? Jose Sa? Anyway. It looked like he had enough time.
You have more letters in your last name.
I'm sure that's like a nickname or something. He had more time. Like, it looked like he had enough
Bernardo
time.
Bernardo Silva's not doing that. He's simply focusing on where the ball's going.
Yeah, I mean, the ball was hit with some pace. I understand that. But in general,
maybe he can come out.
But look, I think this is a subjective thing. Look, the fact that VAR got involved is like, well, one person thinks.
Well, if you remember, the goal's in. You got Stones standing in front of his fans. And you see an image of Gary O'Neill going, offside, 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 offside. It's offside, it's offside. And then the guy's like, we're checking it. So the goal check is what took a while. Eventually, VAR, the ref gets called. He watches it. I'm watching and I'm saying to myself, this doesn't feel like you could overturn it.
Yeah.
Had it been called offside for interference, I don't think you overturn it either. I think it goes with whatever the ref called. Yeah. And in that moment,
it's a subjective
it was called
thing.
A goal.
Yeah. I mean, it feels more like a goal than not a goal. That is just my subjective opinion. But I do, I 100% understand. If they disallowed it, I'd be like, all right, yeah. I guess that's the rule. Well, I mean, you know. But a frustrating...
If this was Arsenal, Bernardo Silva would have three red cards.
This is the... again, this in the larger picture, it's just another like... It's like, are City going to win again? Like, it's just like nothing can stop
them.
Can we
actually talk? I know we have other stuff on the run, and honestly, I don't care. Can we talk about this? Is it boring to watch City?
No, you saw that goal from Gvardiol?
This game was kind of boring, though.
I mean, you're asking in general, is it boring to watch City?
Has it become boring? It kind of has, man.
I wouldn't go that far.
When I think about football, when I think about soccer, I think about like, you know, you're competing with the other team. This whole just everything is pinned down to one side and it's just passing around and around and around until somebody gets a shot off. Gvardiol's goal was great. But he has like two goals in four. Make him a striker at this point, you coward. You know, like clearly the guy got his shooting boots on, not his defending boots. I don't know, man. Part of me is like, I'm not one of these people that says like Pep Guardiola ruined football. That's a narrative that seems to be taking
hold. No, but it's just boring. That's all you're saying.
I'm saying it's kind of boring.
I don't agree.
The early City days were way more exciting. This is kind of like, you might have figured out too much about football at this point.
I think it's on the other teams to figure out how to neutralize what City are doing. And it's remarkable to me that nobody really can. I mean, like Liverpool, Arsenal occasionally, but Liverpool to me are the biggest contenders as far as just like to neutralizing City to some degree and not letting them.
I think like teams like Villa and stuff could give them a run for their money.
Could possibly, but they have not. I've not seen it regularly and pretty consistently throughout the year.
Arsenal also took 4 points from Manchester City.
Arsenal, credit to them as well. But this is
4 points, I believe, from Liverpool last year.
This is, look, it's just whatever game plan. What it's just what's remarkable to me more than anything is like however City scouts players and are whoever they want to bring in, see, it's like they've played for City for 12 years. Like they know
Oscar Bob is 45 years old and has been there since he was a child.
They know where to be. Yeah. I don't know if it's credit to Pep and how he, you know, implements the system and tell every player what to do, but it is just wild how there's nobody that ever seems out of place.
Yeah. So very frustrating.
Not boring to me. All right. The other team we were mentioning, Liverpool and Chelsea. They played.
This was the match of the weekend.
This was a really,
man.
Really,
this was
really good, exciting. Entertaining game.
Yo, Chelsea balled, bro.
Yeah. This is a, again, we doubted what Chelsea, especially, I mean, we doubted them, but we had reason to because the last couple of years have been kind of crazy.
Hey, bro, I was talking about Enzo Maresca from the beginning, man. I gave this guy a lot of credit. I really believed his ability to do it. Think about how he answered the question about like, oh, you got 44 players in the squad.
Sure.
He's like, I don't care. I care about the 2023 that we're dealing with. I don't care about anyone else. And this guy's, I think, led the line correctly. His biggest fault is that I don't think he has great defenders right now.
Sure.
Reece James comes back finally. A round of applause for Reece James, man. He's been out.
Prayers up for them hamstrings. Bruh. Keep them healthy, dog.
Wrap yourself in bubble wrap between matches, bro. shouts to Reece James for being back. But when I saw watching this match, I'm thinking to myself, bro, you made Liverpool practically park the bus at home at Anfield. That's crazy.
Sure.
If you're a Liverpool fan, you're like, who cares? We walk out of here with a win. I'm goody. I got my 3 points. I'm fine. Yeah, but I got to be honest. Chelsea isn't the team. It's not set up right now to win the title. They're set up to compete for fourth right now, right? We're thinking about the title race as a three-horse race. You've got whatever order you want. You've got Liverpool, Manchester City, Arsenal. Whoever's going to win out of those is probably going to come out of those three. The fourth spot, the last Champions League spot, is really what we're all competing against if you're not a fan of those three. And if you're a Chelsea fan, you got a real shot. That's you. And Chelsea are young, dude. Nico Jackson is super young. Everyone in the States, the youngest team in the league, man. I think actually Liverpool might be the youngest team in the league. But Chelsea, super, super young. If they could get a little bit more experience, they could fix that back line and get a better goalkeeper, they are going to be dangerous. And that's not something we were talking about with Chelsea like a year ago.
Yeah, they look like they're having some fun out there.
Cole Palmer was quiet in this one.
Yeah, he didn't do too great. He had one decent, really, really good chance that he hit over the bar. But... I just look playing at Anfield, you see how difficult it is and how difficult a time teams have.
It's super intimidating. Champions League teams don't want to go
and there. It's just the margins are just again always like kind of so small, and like if you can't have that like killer instinct of a finish when necessary, you know, the goal from the game winning goal from Curtis Jones was just The pass, who made the pass? I think Salah made the pass.
Salah with that crazy ball, and then Curtis Jones just kind of last second tucks it.
Yeah, but it was just the mentality to have the and the poise and the calmness
to make the run, but
the touch. Pluck it out of the air, set it up right in front of you, and I love that you would instinctively. He trapped it with his left foot, and you would also probably hit it with your left foot because you're probably your standing leg would be your right, and you get some power on it with your left. And he just hit it with you trapped it with his left, and then outside of the boot tapped it with his right. Yeah. And you saw the goalkeeper just like assume he was probably going to go with his left and, right. and went in that direction. And it's just those little moments that kind of just make a difference.
Think about it. He doesn't start if Alexis McAllister isn't coming back from international break.
Okay, yeah.
How crazy is that? And he had a phenomenal game.
I mean, I think it was one of the two Robbies, I forget which one, mentioning that that Curtis Jones should probably get a few more opportunities in the
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Alexi McAllister is probably one of your better players if you're Liverpool, sure. but you got to figure out a way to get Curtis Jones on that pitch.
Curtis Jones, I saw he was talking about his celebration. He had the thumb sucking mm-hmm. celebration. He said he just had a daughter, and he was
beautiful.
He was like, he was funny just the way he described it. He's like, I want her to know that goal is for her. If she understood what the world was, or like yeah. what was going on, but always have
right
the clip.
Now just a mush with us.
So no, but a big
I
win.
I want someone to do that goal celebration and be like, I have no baby. She really likes sucking my thumbs.
Yeah. I went to junior high school with a kid.
With a thumb sucker?
Thumb sucker. The entire, throughout junior high school, the entire time.
No one said anything to him?
Every time. Everybody was like, yo, what are you doing, bro? Yeah. And it was, and he was also like, he must have been like six, it's in junior high school. He was like 6'2". Tall black kid, thumb sucker.
Well, no one's going to say anything to him.
I remember his name was
6'2".
His name was Keith. Keith, bro. I hope he stopped.
Really? That guy's probably smoking cigarettes now. He's got that oral fixation.
And also, last up in this segment before we get to Axel, in Pulisic news, because mm-hmm. He got the game-winning assist in his game for
Pulisicini,
that's right. Huh? Because Christian Pulisic, I think we were talking about this because we were a couple weeks ago about you know, we know he speaks German because he obviously spent a lot of time in Dortmund, but
he speaks American.
He speaks fluent American. But we were asking, is he going to learn Italian?
And we've confirmed it.
Yo,
bro,
the answer is C. The answer is a loud C, because Christian Pulisic did, I believe, his first interview, post-match interview in Italian. And this is so great to see, bro. Let's hear a little bit of it.
Dura, sporca anche, ma quanto importante.
Sì, abbiamo sofferto tutta la partita, come abbiamo lavorato tutta la volta.
I mean, this is...
I love it. The spirito della squadra.
No, this makes me want to order chicken parm, dog.
Il perfetto.
Perfetto.
I love it.
Can we cut to Weston McKennie when he got asked and he was like, huh? We got interviewed in Italian. He was like, what? Someone stop this man.
But he's good now. Weston is good now.
Yeah, now he's good.
He got it.
But look at, yo.
Also, credit to them, bro. They've learned Italian pretty fast.
Hell yeah.
I mean, Pulisic is... Weston's been there longer.
The freeze frame you have this on is homie to his left look up right
Chukwueze.
Now. Chukwueze looked like he was like, perfetto, bro. Who taught you all this?
And Chukwueze did his... He answered in English.
Yeah.
So he's not... His Italian's not even...
And his name sounds Italian. Chukwueze.
It could be. But... Well, no, man.
I'm happy for Pulisic. He's having a wonderful year, man.
Without a doubt,
man. He got the second most goal contributions this season behind Lautaro Martinez.
That's why
he's speaking Italian. He's enjoying San Siro.
That's why he didn't go to Mexico. He's like, yo, I got an Italian lesson. Yeah, I can't be playing against it.
I got a pasta la gricia on the stove. I can't.
But no, it was great to see, man. I absolutely loved it. So, all right, let's we got to get to our interview with Axel Hellmann. This is so exciting. CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt, Axel Hellmann. Comment right up right after this.
Christian, our guest is here. This is, dude. I feel like I should have worn a Stu Broder briefcase to work today.
Just the front office is here. Okay, now we gotta act, we gotta behave, we gotta be in our best behavior.
This is a business episode now.
Okay,
which is short for business.
Let me get my spreadsheets ready. I got a lot to bring up.
I feel like I should be pitching stuff. Maybe we will before the end of the episode, but this is an absolute honor.
This is super cool because joining us, the CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt, which is, there's a, you know, when two comedians get the opportunity to interview people people on the show, people usually think of players, but it's like, No.
We want to go to the money man.
We diversify.
Who signs them checks? You feel me? That's what I want. And ladies and gentlemen, as we said, the CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt. That's right, the Bundesliga team, Eintracht Frankfurt. We got Axel Hellman, everybody.
Axel, what's up, man?
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure. It's an honor. It's an honor.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, so one of the things, whenever we have...
Did they tell you what show this was?
No. I'm not on CBS.
This is what all Americans are like.
Whenever we have Bundesliga guests, and we've had the luxury and opportunity to go to Germany twice. We've been to an Eintracht Frankfurt game. Yeah. And the one thing that always happens is people from Bundesliga, especially Bundesliga International, will reach out to us and be like, hey, I think this person might be good on your show or whatever. But when I asked about you, I'm like, oh, you know, we've never really had a Bundesliga sort of CEO on the show. And like, he said, Axel would be the perfect guest for this show because he is maybe a little bit different than some of the other folks. Yes.
They did.
Yeah. And he has a great personality and a big personality. How accurate was that assessment?
Well, you see what $50 can help to come into a show like yours.
Yeah. We're willing to pay, folks. That's what I need you to know.
No, but absolutely honored to be here. Thank you so much for joining us. This is so cool. So obviously, look, we've been, like I said, we've been to Frankfurt and we've gotten to go to a game. We were at the Frankfurt versus Bayern match, 5-1 a couple years ago.
That's the reason why we won 5-1. You guys brought the success.
Start the GoFundMe now. Get us out there when you need a win. You
know?
I actually had to write an apology to Attila, the bird.
Yeah.
After that episode.
Oh, yeah. The Attila got... I would say I got a little too close to Attila.
You have touched him?
Yeah. I didn't touch, but he...
They went to take a photo and the bird looked at him and I let him know on the podcast, look, we're comedians. So I said, bro, if that bird tried, I would have fought the bird for you. And that upset the fans. So I apologize to the bird. We're good now. I'm allowed back in commerce.
That didn't have to happen.
You bet I did. Exactly. Yeah.
But I want to talk...
You realize how big those birds are.
Yeah, right. But I want to talk about your role at Eintracht Frankfurt. When we think of CEOs, I mean, it can be a job where you sort of bring your expertise to it, and maybe you have your hands in a lot of different things. But what your day to day? What is your focus as CEO of Eintracht Frankfurt?
Well, there are three pillars I mainly focus on. The first is the whole organization and all the commercial parts of the club. Except merchandising and ticketing, so all the marketing and communication issues, but also all the strategic issues we have to work on. I mean, there are many from the league perspective to the club perspective. Mm-hmm. And we have also a big field. Fan engagement is a big thing for Eintracht Frankfurt. We have a long tradition, you know, in going abroad, having a huge fan base. So there are many, many things to do for the whole organization.
Yeah, I hosted when Bundesliga had their, they did like a watch party in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And I got to MC it and it was really cool. And so there were, I think, four matches highlighted. And one of them was Eintracht. I think they played Leipzig, if I'm not mistaken. And but there were other two, a Bayern match and a Dortmund match. And so all the supporters were there at this bar. The biggest supporters group, especially in Washington, D.C., you don't necessarily think of it, but it was Eintracht Frankfurt. The most, the loudest. Where ever since we started doing this show, and then, you know, Eintracht has been kind in sending us gifts here and then years ago that it started. And you don't... So I was not aware of this incredible support for Eintracht Frankfurt in the United States. It's really, really remarkable.
We are not thinking in quantity. We are thinking in quality.
Okay.
We have a lot of, you know, very engaged
CEO
fans.
Speak, bro. Okay.
I hope the partners and sponsors are watching.
I like it.
Now, to be very frank, of course, Bayern Munich and Dortmund, they have a much bigger fan base and reach. But we have very active fans. I mean, that's not only domestically, but also internationally. They're following us everywhere. And that's the point where you get the feeling, geez, Eintracht fans are everywhere. And
yeah.
We are the loudest, of course. We are the loudest in Europe.
Applevine usually helps. Let me ask you a question, because obviously there's a big interest in the American market for most major clubs, right? Getting more fans in America seems like a good thing to do. have you guys, maybe it's not just you, all of Bundesliga, have you thought about shortening the team names to make it easier for us to pronounce? There's a club called Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Exactly.
No one is spelling that, bro.
I mean, that would have been my example. Borussia Mönchengladbach Frankfurt is like Frankfurt is easy. Frankfurt, everybody knows because of the Frankfurter. Everybody knows Frankfurt.
How about Frankfurt. Frankie?
Have we thought Frankie. Of it? Frankie. Yeah. Eintracht Frankie.
Eintracht
Frankie.
I'm just saying it rolls off the tongue.
Let me tell this to my ultras. Ultras.
Don't tell them I said it.
And I lose my job in the next
this
second.
This was an Axel Hellman idea.
Yeah. This is a Hellman exclusive.
The Eintracht Frankie. No, but you're right. I mean, that is traditional German language is not that easy to pronounce. It's not easy to speak, and sorry about that, but we can't change the names of our clubs after 125 years.
Yeah. You know? Damn, that damn tradition. How about this? The hot dog, it's called the Frankfurter because of Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Americans love hot dogs. There's a way to blend their culture there.
You mean Eintracht hot dog?
Yeah, I'm just saying, what about the Eintracht hot dog? The Frankie!
Designed for the US market. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's like, look, I'm going to be spitting ideas through the whole interview.
When it comes to engaging with the U.S. market, I know lots of Bundesliga clubs and the Bundesliga itself is. We all know the World Cup is happening here in 2026, and as far as a potential fan base of maybe football fans that don't really maybe are new to the game, there's a big opportunity. What are your focuses on how to engage with that American audience?
Two things: we believe that the best athletes of the world coming from the U.S. market.
Okay.
In many different, sports branches, but also in soccer. So that's what we think. That's one of the reasons why we're very active with our scouts on the U.S. market. And the other thing is we can learn a lot. I mean, media production, the whole commercial partnership models, etc. So that is something where we can learn a lot. And if you see how, for example, the NFL produces in media terms their sport, I mean, this is outstanding. And that's the reason why we are just being here with open eyes.
Sure.
Can I ask a question on...
It's your show, Alexis.
No,
feel
but
free.
I mean on the business side of it, because this confuses us all the time. We talk about this. Football, soccer, the whole world loves it, right? There's maybe three or four countries where it's not the number one sport. We're sitting in one of them. The NFL, one country. And the NFL makes so much more money than some of the big leagues around the world. How is that possible when the whole world loves the sport?
Well, but the NFL is more advanced, more elaborated in terms of commercializing their sports than any other league in soccer. I mean, you got the Champions League, UEFA Champions League. They're quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But since you have just a clear focus on the domestic market with your NFL and now exporting the brands also to other countries, you're coming with an extremely tough power into foreign markets. So that's the reason why, from my perspective, this is the most elaborated level of sports marketing at all. So that's the reason why we can learn. Football has its very, well, it's not one singular football. You have different systems. You got the Premier League, you got the Champions League, you got the Bundesliga. So there is no coherent model in Europe. They are different models. That makes it more difficult to market it to a broader audience in that, really tough, specific way.
So let's Americanize it. This corner brought to you by Indeed, This throw-in brought to you by...
Monetize every aspect of the game.
The perception of European fans is different. I mean, we don't want to, market everything we have. It's not, it's not entertainment. It is not entertainment. It's about life and death.
Right.
That is a big difference to the franchise models you got in the US.
Yeah.
So it's a quasi-religious thing in Europe. And so we can't market everything.
What about Knicks games, they have a t-shirt cannon. It's this big cannon that shoots t-shirts.
Actually, we bought one, but not one of the huge cannons. We started with a smaller one.
The handheld one.
Exactly. We want to. It's a step
very
by
German.
Step.
the gun gently hands a t-shirt.
I'm not quite sure if this is very German. Usually, we have the biggest cannons.
They took the cannon from Arsenal.
Yeah.
One of the options as far as Americanizing Bundesliga is. Could also be, it's one of the things you can learn here in the United States, is having comedians be a part of the
Now we're talking.
Having comedians be a part of the game. What is the what is the German equivalent? How much is comedy involved in the sport? Because and I'll say this, a couple of years ago, we were at an event and there was someone who worked for Bayern Munich at the New York office, right? And this is when we had first started. This might have been 2017 or something like that. And we asked them, like, in Bundesliga, what do they do in Germany? What do the comedians do?
How do the players react when they talk to comedians?
And he specifically said, he's like, they would never allow a comedian near any of these
talking
clubs.
About life and death. There's no space for comedians.
Yeah, no, we've learned that.
But seriously,
we've read our comments.
We have the format. We have it coming up. We have two or three quite good and quite intelligent guys. But they came from a club perspective.
Right.
You know, they're clearly fans. So they knew exactly where you can make a joke and where you better don't.
Yeah.
That's a thing we've learned.
Where not to make a joke. Okay, we've been doing this for 9 years.
Maybe we can learn from the Germans.
Maybe one day we will learn when not to make
that,
the joke.
There is that. It's a fascinating thing because in American sports, it lends itself a little bit more to humor people can... They're okay being like the Dallas Cowboys, right? That's the perennial team that is like basically the most popular team in the country, but they just always lose. And even Dallas Cowboys fans can accept, like, we're going to make fun of ourselves.
Right. Imagine if Tottenham had the popularity of like a Real Madrid.
Right.
but the history of Tottenham. To give you an idea.
So it's an interesting thing to navigate because you made the point. There's not a lot of room for humor, but I sort of have to pat ourselves on the back that we've managed to last this long without anybody getting too mad at us. You know what I mean? So there's something to even that we've been to matches. We were at the Revier Derby, and there's something on the, you know, Bundesliga matches are, especially televised, are just unreal. Like the tifos, the flares, it is something that
choreography is incredible. The fan bases are wild.
It's something where people ask, like, why can't they do this in the Premier League? Why can't they do this in some of these other leagues? And I know even in Major League Soccer and NWSL, there's a lot of supporters travel to Germany to see how the supporters do it and how they kind of get that culture to where it is. And we just copy it. And because we kind of want that here, we see that with LAFC. Yeah. So when it comes to even the marketing sense, like there's stuff you have to, like, I don't know, you're competing. You have to borrow some ideas from other clubs. Like, is there any thing that inspires you now, either from different parts of the world, different sports, different or other clubs?
Yeah, well, in the 80s, we had a tradition or built a tradition very close to the English football tradition. So it was more, let's say, really fan clubs supporting their team going everywhere. And in the 90s, it was Italy. It was, let's say, the role model for German fans. So the ultras came up. And I think in terms of fan engagement and passion, the Bundesliga is now the role model for many other countries. So let's see how it goes to. But I believe since we have, let's say, this serious approach, I mean, it's not really fun. We are not there for entertainment. We are there just to beat the other team.
Right.
So that is the most important thing. We as officials, we can see that as a, let's say, also entertainment part and as a commercial thing. But for our fans, it's definitely not. They're spending their whole life to travel, to follow the team, to supporting the team. They're spending hours and hours to prepare their choreography. And, you know, it is not, it's part of their life. It's a family. Mm-hmm. They're not just meeting when going to a match. They're meeting because it's the core of their life. And that is really a different thing to many other sports, professional sports branches I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be different to be the CEO of a football club, right? Because if I'm the CEO of Coca-Cola, no one's living and dying based on the new flavor.
You're totally right. You're totally right.
You're the guardian. You're seen as a guardian of this club, right?
Yeah, but that's true. That's true. To a certain extent, we have also to find the small way through, on the one hand, commercial partnerships, on the other hand, keeping alive, you know, the fire and the passion. And sometimes we miss the point. And so our fans writing banners, throwing tennis balls, you know, being active, being active to show,
showing you how they feel. No one's outside of, you know, Coca-Cola's head offices. There's only one Diet Coke. You know what I mean? It's not happening. You know what I mean? That must make your job a little bit more difficult. What is the success of a CEO? Because you don't control what happens on the pitch. You know, whether the club wins or loses has no guidance over what your job is. A CEO of a football club, a major football club, is successful because what happens?
Not easy to answer because many factors coming together. It's not that you have to run a whole administration or organization. That is the technical part. Mm-hmm. But I think the most important part is that you can feel the specific character of a club, of the fans. You know, I grew up in the club. I'm a member since 1974 when I was a young boy, 3 years old. Wow. My father made me a member. And so we went to the stadium in the 70s. So I grew up in the club and I can smell things before others can smell it. Yeah. So I know where to go and who to talk to if things are in a critical situation. Sometimes we have that with our fans, that they, you know, that they're beyond the border. So what it needs is that you have a good contact to the bases as well as to the companies, B2B, D2C, understanding the whole environment of a club. I think this is the great success. I'm not responsible for sports. We have a sports executive. He's doing everything with a squad, with a team, with the players, the transfers. But the basis on which he can work, you know, successfully is built by the others in the club. Mm. That is a thing that you need to understand.
It's interesting, especially I didn't realize how connected you were with the club for so long. How do you separate your fandom and your role?
Good question. Yeah.
Are you ever like, yo, this CEO sucks? Oh, it's me.
I'm happy when I have no camera or no media following me over the 90 minutes.
Right.
Because I'm not quite sure. Don't ask me what I've said after 90 minutes. I'm not quite sure that this is, you know, we would create a kind of, let's say, a criminal reaction. But as a fan, it's better to be a fan of a club if you are able to make really realistic and rational decisions. That is what you have to, this is the distinction you have to make in your mind.
Yeah, you have to be able to separate that. At least for 90 minutes, you can be the old.
In 90 minutes,
Don't expect any professionalism out of me.
Just thought about that. Like, if the camera's on you too much during a game, that means something bad's happening.
Right? Yes, that's true. Happened before. Yeah. It was not really, I've seen myself then, and you know, I said, oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. If the camera's on us, we're like, yes! If the camera's on you, you're like, oh, God.
So from the sporting side, I mean, one of the cool things was when Paxton Aronson joined.
We got an American on.
When Paxton Aronson joined, right now I know he's on loan at FC Utrecht. Yeah. But his inclusion, him being a part of the team, I mean, I know his first few matches, I think there's a little bit of like, you know, he's a young kid and he probably definitely needs just the experience and the minutes, and he's getting that at Utrecht. He already has 2 goals and 1 assist. Yeah. But is there anything you can share on your thoughts on Paxton Aronson?
Well, I think he's not, he's a great talent, but he's not a talent anymore. He's now becoming really an experienced player, and he needs practice. So that's the reason why he plays for Utrecht right now, to get that practice. And we have great expectations to have him back. And let's see, you know, in the perspective, Mario Götze, he won't play another 10 years. Mm-hmm. So there could be opportunities, but the most important thing is for him to have a clear and straight view where to go to. I mean, it is not fun. It's business. Sometimes it's not enough to be a talent. It's not enough to play, you know, to have capabilities, skills. Mm-hmm. You have to be mentally, you have to be strong to become a professional football player in Bundesliga.
That's probably why I didn't make it.
I
had the talent. It was the drive.
The other thing I want to mention and show you this, because this popped up on this one, kind of viral.
This is on everyone's free.
This
page.
On everyone, but this popped up yesterday. And I was like, oh, what a coincidence. We have Axel Hellman on tomorrow. How perfect is this? But this was a video of
a U9 goalkeeper. Absolutely slicing through an entire team
for Eintracht Frankfurt. So this is everybody's been going crazy about this clip. But when you see the goalkeeper, and you know, cheers to this young man, because he gets the ball at the top of his own box, and then runs through every single defender. This looks like maybe a 7-a-side, but this is remarkable.
Nines, they're not going to play the whole pitch.
I don't know what they're doing at Eintracht there in Bundesliga, but
it's the typical part of our education for a goalkeeper.
But this, seeing this and seeing how much people are posting about it, can you share anything on the Eintracht?
Does he have an agent? Does he want two comedians to represent him?
Okay, because you know we're.
I think he's still agent free. Could be your child.
Come on, man. Okay. Let's get this money.
All right, we have a new business. I heard you're a lawyer. So
but to be honest, this video is now around the globe, so you have to speed up to get in contact with him. Otherwise, the big agents are already.
Yeah, there's a lot of people at his parents' door. But can you share anything about the Eintracht Academy? The fact that is this a common thing? Do the goalkeepers, do basically all the children play several positions and learn everything? How can you explain this level of skill right now?
Well, I mean, this is a specific situation. I mean, he goes through, you said you slide through the team, but usually, that's our intention. We want to educate them in an offensive thinking way, just to score. Mm-hmm. So, and even if the goalkeeper start to score,
show me what you got.
I'm sure, but
you're a field player with gloves.
Thinking positive means thinking in offense, and thinking in an offensive action means moving forward, making goals, showing your technical abilities. So I'm not that surprised.
No, though, I think the fascinating
the whole
part,
world is.
Because I think the fascinating thing here is when we think of German football and we think of German efficiency, that was a common thing when we were
I
there.
Love that. you're the very last ones believing in German efficiency on the globe. Yeah.
I did drive a Volkswagen.
It's a good show.
I did drive a Volkswagen once. I no longer believe in efficiency.
But when you sort of think of that kind of rigid and maybe strict way of operating, this doesn't feel.
Germans follow the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd expect the goalkeeper to stay.
But it's in accordance to the rules. What's wrong
yes,
with it?
But you expect, like, I'm not allowed to get out of my position because that would disrespect your position. Yeah.
So it seems like there is a progress or a change.
Or a Colombian coach.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody from South America that might be influencing.
Higuita's nephew.
But in those years, I mean, in that age, I'm quite sure that they changed the position of the goalkeeper and having them on the field. I mean, I know that from my sons. They're both goalkeeper and they were playing, you know, on different positions before. So this is just coincidence. Maybe he's playing as a striker usually. You can't know.
No, I do like this though. You know, my nephew who's 9 years old, he's...
Oh, show him.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm like, this is
encourage him.
I wish that was my nephew. That's what I'm going to tell him. This is my new nephew. You're nothing to me. No,
bully your nephew.
Yeah, I'm giving him your Christmas gifts. But I'm telling him he wants to be a goalkeeper. And I say, you've got to learn to play with your feet. This is a prime example. This is someone who will grow up, if he does remain as a goalkeeper, who will be very good and technical with his feet because you learn those skills at a young age.
Yeah.
And you're showing a good example of that. I do want to ask in general, when it comes to opening up to the American market, why would an American who hasn't picked a Bundesliga team, why should they pick Eintracht?
As a fan or as a player?
As a fan.
I mean, look, we bring something, you know, that is not quite the typical franchise professional sports way. Fan engagement, passion. You remember when we've been to Barcelona with 35,000 fans.
Sure.
So that means we are a club.
They were not happy, the Barcelona.
They were not happy.
That's actually what they started shocked, the anti-tourist campaign. You know what? No more tourists.
This is a fantastic story how you can activate if you're part of a family. It was not stimulated by us. We didn't say, please go all to Barcelona.
Sure.
It happens by the community. It was stimulated by the community. But we are not playing Champions League for the last 30 years. So that means we are not a well-known global brand like Real Madrid, Arsenal, or the others. Mm. So for us, these kind of being a family, having passion, living that spirit is particular. And this is a good story for the US market because you have fan engagement as well. Mm-hmm. But our fan engagement comes from the 50+1, you know, participation issue. That is something else. The club belongs to the people. It's a democratic thing.
Yeah.
It's not a financial thing. It's a democratic thing. And I like that very much for as a concept to compete with the big, you know, investor-driven clubs in Europe. I like that idea. It's not the war. It's the fight of the systems.
Yeah. No, I love that because that's one of the things I really, really love about Bundesliga and Bundesliga fans is their appreciation of the 50+1 and how different it makes them than the other leagues. When working in that professional setting as a front office person and as a fan, I know there must be, as a fan, you're like, this is, it highlights the passion of our club and the ownership of our, we have a say, the fans have a say. But as a front office person, there has to be some up times where you're like, man, I wish we could accept that $3 million sponsorship. Yeah.
Have they thought about a 48+1?
You hit the point. I love the concept of 50+1, but it needs a lot of effort. And sometimes it's exhaustive to talk to a lot of people to get them on the same page with your ideas.
Right.
But look, our way in the last almost 10 years, I mean, was because of the combination of both. That we had the people's enthusiasm and total identification with the club on the one side, but also they understand that we have to go forward and be totally professional if we want to compete with the big brands in Europe. I mean, we are playing EuroLeague, not Champions League, but also the clubs we meet in the EuroLeague, they are on a really high level and they're well-financed. Yeah, so that is something where also our fans understand that it's professional football. And that means we have to do business and we have to go into a commercial partnership.
Of course.
I mean, financial fair play, right? You have to, your revenues have that to be a certain thing. Amount that's before you can spend a certain amount. So you just have to build that.
I'm looking very much how the Man City thing, you know, goes forward.
Everybody's watching.
Yeah, we're all interested on what's going on there.
Every time Manchester City's mentioned, we hit that button.
Yeah. In case they're watching.
Don't they?
Don't catch a 116.
My last question is referring. You had, when Alexis asked you about why would a fan pick Eintracht Frankfurt, you said fan or player. I'm curious about why would a player pick Eintracht Frankfurt?
That's
what are your
thoughts?
That's
a very good question, and I was looking forward to that question. Yeah. I mean, look, Frankfurt as a club gives you good opportunities to grow and to develop. That is very important. I mean, there are some logistic issues. The airport, you're close to your family. You can get, you know, over the Atlantic whenever you want to. But this is a technical thing. Try to imagine you're a big talent. What do you want? You want to be on a stage for a better club or a Premier League club, or you want to promote. And everybody has an eye on Frankfurt. We have every single match. We have 30, 40 scouts from all over Europe watching our matches. And look, the strikers we developed in the last, I mean, not the goalkeeper, became
soon. You know, 2 years before he's on the
We incubated strikers like no other club in Europe. And that's a big thing. If you're a talented player, you know you can start a big career coming to Frankfurt. And that is what I think is very attractive for U.S. athletes.
Yeah, I mean, even you know, outside of just U.S. athletes, but I mean, we had Hugo Larsson was on the show recently, and he obviously spoke highly of the club. He played for the club.
He's having a good time.
But more than anything, it's like when you see his age and you see the responsibility that he has given, and clearly not only just you know, we're talking about talent, but the mentality for just to and trust given on such a young player to play such an important role in that midfield says a lot about a club to you know, be able to do take that risk and give that trust to a particular player.
This is the concept we now follow, and this is also a typical situation where we just get players to the club, giving them the responsibility. They grow, they perform, and of course, it's a fair deal to a certain extent that they say, "Well, there's another club giving me a better salary. Yeah. Fantastic, I'm fine." But the most important thing that we create, the infrastructure, facilities, the team, the coaches, and the passion of the fans. Because you're in Frankfurt, you're loved by the people when you are a good striker.
That's true.
They push you forward.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Axel, this has been
incredible.
This has been incredible. Thank you so much for hanging out. I hope you had a good time as well. so thank you. It's an absolute honor.
He's thinking Frankie.
Yeah, take that back.
T-shirt.
I take that concept back.
Cannon.
He has some of his coworkers here taking some notes.
I saw a couple not bad. I
was booked for CBS and ended here. Fantastic.
Yeah, this is better. You get to be a midterm man.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for being here.
Absolute honor.
Shout out to Axel Hellman. Thank you so much for coming through.
Who knew CEOs had such big personalities?
You know, we need more of those big, you know, personalities in the show, in the front office.
I was going to say, don't say that because, Elon Musk listening. So.
You know, Elon.
Yeah, some CEOs, we don't want no personality.
Elon tunes in. Yes, yeah.
He's a big fan. He actually is a, what, Manchester United fan?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he listens to our show to get his best ideas on how to ruin the world.
Yeah. I'm always like, you know what would be cool is if you block someone, but they could still see your stuff.
That's the best way to do it. So shout out to Axel Hellman. Also, shout out to the Halloween decorations, all right? It's spooky season.
Not shut up. Beware.
Beware of the Halloween decorations. Beware. You like it? All right? You see all the little bats flying around?
We did that ourselves.
Okay. Go Bats. I'm wearing the Gotham jersey as well. So let's talk about MLS decision day and look forward to the playoffs a little bit. But Inter Miami broke the points record. They are now officially the greatest ever team in Major League Soccer.
Feels right.
Feels right. I mean,
you got Busquets, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez with only one knee, but still Luis Suarez. Lionel Messi. Have you heard of him?
Wait, but
Tata Martino is your coach.
Luis Suarez is probably the most shocking thing here. 20 goals on the season, a couple assists in there. The assists for Messi's third goal to complete the hat trick.
The back heel?
Not the back heel. The threw his leg up in the air.
From the
pass for Campana. Bro, I thought you couldn't even play with your kids because your knees are so destroyed.
Bro, I have a feeling they just lay him down in the stadium and they come back a week later. It's time for the next game.
Okay. No time with family. Yeah. No use of those knees.
He's gotta go into his cryogenic chamber.
You gotta stop being a backup dancer for Meg Thee Stallion.
Damn.
So he was devastated. But bro, that pass was crazy. But they're
having fun, man.
The hat trick from Lionel Messi to finish this season, his first hat trick for Inter Miami, which already feels weird. Like, you couldn't get a hat trick earlier.
You want to hear something crazy? Charlie called this game, and I asked him. I said, right around that 2 minute with that 2-goal point, you were like, oh, buddy, we're about to win. Stop Inter Miami from, you know, being the points leader.
Oh, that's right, because they're playing against New England.
New England Revolution, which hold the record, were previously held the record.
Charlie calls the game for radio.
For Revs.
For the Revs radio. Revs radio, yeah.
And then he was like, when Messi came in, he was like, oh, I think this is going to change stuff. I remember immediately what happened.
Wow, I was right.
Damn, I'm a soothsayer.
So, just a wild, look, I think... We were having sort of the debates about, is Messi MVP and, he didn't play enough games. We had Sasha Kljestan said, you are an unserious person if you're going to vote for Messi as MVP. This game, I was a little bit on the fence.
If you were on the fence, this game made you say he deserves to be MVP.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. How could you argue otherwise?
Can I suggest, though, that if
it.
You are the most valuable player.
Uh-huh.
Then your team wouldn't be as good without you.
Yes, and I appreciated Witty's comment, Chris Whittingham, on this topic because he also mentioned that Messi, he played a total, I believe, of 19 games out of 34.
Mm-hmm.
He would have missed a certain amount of games due to international breaks. I think he would have missed 6 games.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the injury is what kept him out of some of the other games. So he was going to miss games anyway. So you could say like if Messi got the numbers he got, but played in 6 more games, that would be enough to sort of change your mind that he deserves the vote definitively over everybody else.
No, it's because the team still played really well without him.
They did, but not that much better without him. It was like the points per game were like
They were in first place.
That's correct, but it was 0.01 points per game without Messi, and like 0.01. It wasn't a drastic difference without him. So I understand that point.
So then I'm right.
I'm just saying
the argument he's making is that if you're the MVP, your team should be far worse.
The
far
word valuable is in there.
Without
correct.
You. Not the same or better.
So is Messi the most valuable player? No. Because the team was still a first place team without him.
Sure, but there's still other stats, right? Whether it's tied first for goals, right? 10 assists His shots per game.
No one is arguing that he didn't have a stellar season.
Yes, I understand.
But are you the most valuable? We need to quantify what this trophy and what this award
means.
It is
subjective to a lot of people.
I would have gone for Evander Lucho Acosta.
Lucho.
You could say Danny Bowanga.
Bowanga got a lot of goals. Those are all valid, but there's just so much, I think. So Messi played fewer games than a lot of the other candidates for MVP, and his production was either even or better than the other people he is competing against. He just simply did not play in as many games.
Had the team taken a turn for the worse without him and then come in and they look this amazing, I'm sitting here with you saying, I don't care how many games he played. Clearly, he's the most valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's not the most valuable, but he's the most valuable player in the league, value-wise, dollar-wise.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And he's probably the most important. If you're Apple TV, you're like, that's our MVP. we need that guy. Okay? Ratings matter. But if you are Inter Miami, and I see that you are a very good team without him, and you just happen to be an exceptional team with him, that's not enough of a bump up for me to say.
That is the
MVP.
I respect your, your criteria and your decision. I completely understand that.
You know what? I wasn't going to do the vote. Now I'm going to do the vote just to help skew this. But you know why they ask too many questions in the vote? We both get the email to vote. They ask you everything. Goalkeeper of the year, I get. Referee of the year? Why am I answering this?
I was just saying.
Ask the players.
It's not that many questions.
No,
but
it's a lot. Do you think it's going to be like seven?
But you sound like a, someone who has the privilege to vote in an American election. And it's like, you're going to make me go all the way over there?
Here's the difference.
I got to walk to what? To my voting?
I don't even know where the local school is. Here's the thing. In that one, you don't have to vote down ballot. You could just do the big one. You know what I mean? In this one, they're all mandatory. So I got to pick a referee of the year.
Let me vote
for the big ones. The players should be the ones voting. Why am I voting for referee of the year?
You could also avoid voting for referee of the year if you really don't want
to. No. They're all mandatory. You have to vote all. You got a whole thing.
Well, now we know. Alexis just picked
a
random name.
I thought it was I'm going to be here for 2 minutes, babe. Tell the restaurant I'll be right there. Hilarious. Next thing you know, I show up when it's dessert. Close today.
Messi has my vote for MVP. That last game.
You're unserious.
Three less goals than the Golden Boot leader. And
Carter, break the mold here. Break the tie. Can you vote for someone whose team didn't have a dramatic downfall without them?
I think Messi is going to win MVP.
I didn't ask you that, Carter.
Sure, I agree. And I said this last week to Christian. If your team is just as good without you as they are with you, you might be the best player in the league. You're not the most valuable player in the league.
That's Look, I'm going to respect.
A man of honor.
I'm going to fall on this sword if I have to. But Messi, I think, is just way too impactful. And to me, he's done far more with less minutes. That's all true. It's unbelievable
that
to me.
That doesn't make you the MVP.
They also do not.
Does Gianni Infantino get a vote?
Because
I have a feeling I know which way
he's
going.
If he doesn't play this entire season, do Inter Miami win the Supporters Shield? Of course not.
No, maybe.
No, they do not.
You can't say that unequivocally.
But
no
you can. But the
if
level
he play
of
the
impact.
Whole season, do they pick somebody else up? I mean, there's no way to know that.
It doesn't matter who they pick up. That's my criteria.
It's ridiculous. Maybe they don't break the points record, but they probably win the league.
I don't know.
And also, does Supporter Shield even matter because it's not a balanced schedule?
But you're
going to FIFA Club World Cup.
Because
so
Gianni Infantino
said,
by
the way, even if you don't win Supporter Shield, you're going to FIFA Club World Cup. They would have found a way to squeeze you in there.
Exactly.
Remember the host nation got to have a club that they picked?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because Inter Miami, they're like, oh, we don't need it anymore. Why don't we make that thing up?
I love it. All right. So just a couple quick shout-outs. The Galaxy get second place in the Western Conference after, after Will Kuntz joined us on the show.
Our fault.
They were so close in the 90, what? That was like the 100th minute.
Help us book someone from LAFC next time, and it won't happen again.
A former LA Galaxy player scores the goal,
yeah.
Daniel Sterez, and knocks them
beautiful
out of that first
header.
Place. Great. Oh, beautiful header, yeah.
But do you see the fans, all the 32-50? 52 while watching on their phones.
Yeah, yeah, it was a nice moment. Yeah, it's like beautiful. We don't, because there's no promotional relegation, we don't really get these exact kind of moments.
Yeah,
and it was kind of cool. Yeah, a little bit. And then Atlanta United in the Eastern Conference get into that wild card spot in they beating Orlando. A little controversy there at the end. Yeah, the handball.
Duncan McGuire.
The goal is taken
He's on
away.
The phone with right now with VAR. He's like, I need to talk to somebody.
And so that knocks DC out, put Atlanta in.
So now we get the Joseph Martinez derby, bro.
So that's going to be interesting. And also Dax McCarty gets another game at the very least. You know, another opportunity.
They were
to
like, although we've got... Wait, one more?
Well, okay, yeah, never mind. And we made a little video for that you can watch on our YouTube channel. So go check it out. A little homage to Dax, and shout out to producer Carter for putting that together. Whoever, who could have been?
Who could it have been?
It might be. Is the editor in the room with us?
Yeah. Do you see the editor? Point at them.
Tell me where on the editor
they heard you. Jesus Christ.
Anyway, so make sure you go check that out because it's a really fun video. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Carter, this is...
Oh, yeah.
This is your last episode for a little bit?
For a little bit, Carter.
You want to tell the people why?
I am getting married. Yeah,
we're doing it. Let's go.
Carter's getting married. You're going to be away for about, what, 2-3 weeks, something like that?
Like 10 days. I'll be back 2 Mondays from now.
Okay. Yeah. So,
cool.
Dude, have a great time.
Please.
Enjoy.
From two people who are happily married.
Oh, okay.
Enjoy. That's me and my wife. I don't know what's going on this side of the desk.
Who are you? Who are you speaking about? You're talking about me? No,
enjoy. This is the beginning of a beautiful thing.
Yes, and also enjoy every moment. Yeah, it goes by way too quickly.
Eat.
Trust me when I tell you.
I'm eating. Yeah, we paid too much money for this wedding for me not to eat.
Doug. Yeah, they're going to drag you to all the photos. Your lady's not going to want to take a picture. You're not going to eat before. Oh, because I want to look just as skinny as I did walking down the aisle in the photos. And I don't want to bloat up because of all the food you picked for the cocktail. Trust me when I tell you, eat. And do you have like a wedding planner or a person that's going to be with the wedding party?
We don't have the cash for that. We're planning this for ourselves.
Do you have someone who's going to be like
we have
party?
A point of contact from the venue.
This feels like a best man thing. Tell the best man, hey, you're going to have a bridal suite?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get some food. Get some of the. Get a little bit of everything that's in the cocktail hour. Bring it up to the bridal suite. You'll thank me later.
Yeah,
I promise you.
Do.
Have a good time, bro. I'm happy for you guys.
And also, just to give some advice from Christian's wedding, invite some Dominican cousins. They really know how to turn the party up. Get an uncle that will flirt with Alexis's wife.
I don't have any Dominican cousins. I do have a Puerto Rican best friend who's coming.
That's so that good
that'll
enough?
That'll do. That'll count.
That's a good substitute.
Yeah. If he has an uncle that is married but willing to act single, invite them. Man relentlessly flirted with my wife and tried to get her to dance.
I say some of my family members are available if you need. Happy to provide their contact info.
It's considered a wedding gift.
It's the least I could do. Okay. Everybody's going to be like, does Carter know this man twerking?
Yeah. Why is he dancing with all of our wives at once?
But no, man, have an absolute blast. All right. We'll be back on Thursday. We're going to have a couple rotating producers throughout the time Carter's away. We'll obviously have a blast regardless. So, all right. We'll see you on Thursday for a brand new episode. Thank you again, Axel Hellman, for joining us. And see you on Thursday, everybody. Peace. Subscribe. Do all the things.
Hit all the buttons. Love you guys.